about, you know, when you played and what you did and stuff like that. You signed with the White Sox, right?
Yes, sir.
And you were traded, I don't remember, I should have looked it up. You with Jim, you were traded for Jim Rivera, right? You and somebody for Rivera and somebody, is that right? To the Browns?
There was a couple on each side, I believe. Golly, at this point in time, my memory doesn't quite, I think myself and, well, I'm not sure anymore.
Okay.
Yes, I was traded for Rivera.
And you went to the Browns, and then you were in the majors at about 18 or 19, something like that?
Yeah, at 19.
What kind of minor league experience did you have at that point?
Well, I played a full season in the 3I League, the old Class D ball.
Mm-hmm.
And then the following year, I started in Memphis in Double A. And it was still catching, but I had a real great spring with the White Sox out in Pasadena.
Mm-hmm.
And we played a lot of games against the Browns in spring training, and I'd done quite well. And so when it came trading time in you know, the latter part of the season, the White Sox in July were making their first move in years and years. And they thought if they could get Rivera to play center field for him, they could make a run at the Yankees. And Feck held out for some younger players in the deal. And he wanted me. And yet Clint Courtney was the Browns catcher in the middle of his rookie year, on his way to Rookie of the Year.
Mm-hmm.
So even prior to the trade, they had made an agreement where I was to be tried in the outfield to see how I would do. And I went from Double A back to A and put in the outfield. Of course, I didn't know any of this at the time.
Sure.
I just thought it was a trial by the White Sox because they, too, had gotten Sherm Lawler in a trade, and he had pretty well become their established catcher that year.
He came from the Browns too, didn't he?
Yeah, but not immediately from the Browns. I think he had he was originally a Yankee farmhand.
Yeah, believe it or not.
I want to say had gotten back over to Cleveland somewhere or another.
That could be. I know he went around for a while before he settled down.
Yeah.
So you were up there at the tail end of, what, 52?
52.
And what happened? You went back to the minors?
No, I finished the year with them. I played the last 35, 40 games in the major leagues. And, you know, the Browns were, you know, not all that swift at that time.
Or any time.
And then that particular winter, they were just getting ready to take off for Baltimore, but Beck wasn't going to go with them. He wanted actually to move us to Milwaukee, because if you look back in his career, his dad once had owned the Milwaukee Brewers.
Didn't he own the Brewers? Was his dad?
Well, he might have had some.
He may have run them and his dad owned it. Maybe that was it.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
That may be true. And the American League, for some reason at that point in time, wanted the club to go to Baltimore and not Milwaukee. And local people in Baltimore wanted to buy the franchise rather than have him come with it because, you know, he's one of those guys that, you know, that you either loved or hated because of some of the shenanigans he had done, you know, with the midget.
Yeah. Well, he was good for attendance, I think.
Right. And anyway, he finally, there near the end of 52 and 53, he was just making deals for money. Like, I was prime bait to go into the service. So just before that happened, he made another deal that sent me to Detroit, which Virgil Trucks was involved in.
Yeah, that was a big trade, I remember that.
Yeah, there was, I think, three of us on each side. I think it was myself and Neiman and an outfielder, I believe, named Jake Crawford for Trucks, Growth.
Ned Garver.
His name, Hal White, as I recall.
Wasn't it Ned Garver?
No, he went, but it was a separate deal.
Oh, I see, okay.
But anyway, the minute that trade was made and he owned Trucks, he turned right around and sold Trucks to the White Sox for $100,000.
Oh, wow.
So, which in those days was a pretty good chunk of change.
Oh, sure.
He did two or three deals like that to get money. He got the franchise money with the sale, but he also made some money on the side with a few deals like that. And even though Gargiola says that the old Pirates were the worst team in baseball, and some people will say the original Mets were the worst team in baseball, I think the historians, the true students of the game, will say the 1954 Baltimore Orioles were the worst team in baseball, history of baseball.
Their first year.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was...
I think Turley and Larson both lost 20. A guy that hit 218 or 228 or something was their most valuable player. And, they were not very good.
Yeah, it took a little while to gain respectability. The Browns were a hard act to follow.
They kept it forever, right up till today.
Yeah, they sure do have it now. So you went to the Tigers and to the service at the same time, basically?
I was traded to the Tigers, I think, in December and drafted into the Army in February. So it was 2 years before I saw Detroit.
So when you came back out, did you go to the minors or did you go to the Tigers?
No, I went directly to the Tigers and had a fantastic spring training. Spring of 55, I guess, was the best spring I ever had. They put me in left field and kind of left me alone and for the spring anyway, and I just tore it up down here in Florida. And it looked like everything was going to be peaches and cream. But we got off to a bad start. I think we won one out of our first five, and they panicked almost immediately, and naturally the first person that they benched was the rookie, you know.
Yeah.
And at that point, that's when I kind of started bouncing from position to position.
You were evidently very versatile. Played, what, four or five positions?
Well, probably too versatile. It might have kept me around the major leagues, although I went back out and played minor league ball the last half or middle half of that year because they didn't know what the hell to do with me. They wanted Frank House, their bonus baby,
mm-hmm.
to catch if he possibly could. So, you know, they would rather have had me as an outfielder or first baseman or something. And so they sent me out to get more experience. In fact, they finally made the decision in May or whenever it was that their real weak position was first base. Ferris Fain they had gotten in the offseason, but he had a bad knee. They had Earl Torgerson, who had some age on him.
Mm-hmm.
So when I went back to the minor leagues, I played basically at first base. But then when I was called up at the end of the year, it was right back to playing outfield once and third base once and catch a game or two and then play first a game or two and fill in and. Then the reputation was sort of formed. And in those days, it was enough to keep you in the big leagues. But it was never enough to get you a job, you know, a steady position.
Yeah.
And, you know, looking back on it now, I think if I had my career to live over, I was a fine-looking young catcher. I could throw like hell and had good speed for the catching position and hit with some power. So if I had it to do over, I would say, no way, I'm a catcher. You know, even if it's at Keokuk, you know, if I need experience, if I need to learn, I'd rather do it down there, and when I'm ready, call me up type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to sitting on a big league bench, you know, getting 100 at-bats a year and never winning a job.
Must have been frustrating.
Yeah, after the amateur career I had a fabulous high school and Legion career. Was lucky enough to have played on consecutive World Championship American Legion teams.
Wow.
Which no two teams has ever won two in a row before since.
Is that in Oklahoma?
I won the batting titles both of those years in Legion ball, and that's never been done before since. Was player of the year my final year, and then when I signed and went out, I had a great rookie year in B-ball, you know, and was leading the league in hitting my second year when called to the major league. So, you know, everything had been roses from the 11th grade, you know, through 2 years of pro ball.
Mm-hmm.
It just looked like, you know, there was no way I could miss. And then all of a sudden, I couldn't even get into a game. So it was just, I probably should not have been at the major league level.
At that age, you mean?
At least under the conditions. Detroit back then was, well, Bucky Harris was the manager. He had managed in the 20s and was a great success. Now he's managing in the 50s and probably shouldn't have been. He was almost in his second childhood.
Mm-hmm.
And here I was, the youngest player in the major leagues, and I shouldn't have been there, or, you know, at least shouldn't have been there not playing. You know, if they thought I was good enough to be there, I should have been playing rather than turning to rust. And then, you know, in my late 20s, when I went back to the minor leagues, it was the same old thing. I'd play 1 year as a catcher and make the All-Star team. And then the next year I'd go where a Joe Torre was coming up in the organization.
Wow.
And I'd play the entire season at first base. Well, I'd make the All-Star team as first baseman. Then the next year, I'd catch 60 games and play the outfield 40 and first base 50 and make the All-Star team again, but would never get called up because here, you know, I'm 28, 29, 30. They didn't have a designated hitter or anything like that, you know. And here all these young guys are being called up, and I'm having twice the year they're having at that level. But they're 20, 21, 22. I'm 30, you know.
Mm-hmm. How long did you play, Jay?
Well, I played as a player. The player and player coach, you know, was still active playing for 18 years and then managed for two. So a total of 20.
Well, I didn't realize you managed. Who'd you manage?
Well, I managed the rookie team for the Expos over in Bradenton. First year they had an organization, and then came to West Palm Beach the following year with their A team here. And that's what actually brought me to the West Palm Beach area.
Mm-hmm.
Was to manage a baseball team for Montreal.
Why did you leave the game?
Well, I'd had two fabulous years. The rookie team won the pennant. Was the only time in the history of baseball that an expansion team had won anything.
Mm-hmm.
We won the pennant in Bradenton. And no, you know, any of the other expansion teams, they had never won a pennant of any sort in their first year. But we did. Well, they honored me with moving me up to Class A from there. Well, they sent me over here with basically the same team, minus the three stars. I had a star pitcher who had won 11 in a row in the rookie league, and they took him, well, first to Double A and then the big leagues in that next season.
Who was that?
A young left-hander named Baylor Moore.
Oh, I remember
Texas.
Him.
Mm-hmm. In fact, he never made it. I think they rushed him and burned him out. And then a catcher who had won a lot of games with his bat for me, by the name of Terry Humphrey, who got Coffee in the major leagues.
Yeah.
The Expos and Angels, I believe. They took him to Double-A. And then my big RBI man, a big black outfielder named Willie James, they took him to Double-A, and before the end of the year, that year, he was gone. He was putting him in pro ball.
Mm-hmm.
But with that same bunch of kids, we almost won a pennant here. We fought a much, much more experienced Miami team. Baltimore had worked with Miami for years and years because they had trained there.
Mm-hmm.
And they always tried to win. And late in the season, if they were close, you know, they would send Double-A pitchers, ex-major league pitchers like... I'm trying to think of a Spanish relief pitcher that is Orlando Pena.
Mm-hmm.
He was major league pitcher, triple-A pitcher. Now they're trying to win a pennant in Class A, so they send him down for the last month of the season. And, you know, they really tried to win, and they finally caught us and beat us out the final weekend of the season. So, you know, I thought I'd had two great years back-to-back. And the next year, they took on another A team in Yakima.
Well, the other end of the world.
And asked me to go out there. And I really didn't want to go out there. Hell, I decided that I loved it here. We were probably going to live here. We had found a house we wanted to buy here. And I said, well, really, I'd just, you know, if you don't want to move me to Double-A or Triple-A or Major League Coach or something, how about just leaving me here? And well, that was part of it. Another part of it was they thought I was too soft. They wanted master sergeants for managers. They wanted me to really toughen up my act. And I thought, you know, if you won and produce ball players, you could do it any way you wanted to do it.
That would seem to be the results. Would seem to be the main thing.
Well, you know, like in the rookie league, for example, hell, I went through about 120 guys, and most of them had never been six blocks from home in their life. And they wanted, they wanted the iron fist type of, you know, their other managers at that time were guys like Clyde McCullough, and who was an ex-Marine.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they thought that was the way to go, to, you know, that only the strong will survive and that's the way to build quickly. They had a 10-year plan. They thought that they were trying to copy themselves from the Mets, who had done it in 10 years.
And they're still working on their 10 years.
Yeah. And they're still trying to get it done.
1 year, I remember, in 58, you're with Cleveland.
Uh-huh.
You had 17 hits and drove in 19 runs.
Right.
That's a pretty good percentage.
Yeah, I remember that year. It was probably the only outstanding pinch hit year I ever had. I had pinch hit off and on all through those early years and had not done well at it at all. You know, and then when I would play my once a week or once a month, hadn't hit under those conditions much either. But for some reason, in 58, I think half my home runs, of which I think I had four that year. I think two of them were extra inning or bottom of the ninth home runs that we won a ball game with them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it just funny situation. In fact, from then on, I was a good pinch hitter. You know, during my latter years in minor leagues, I probably pinch hit every game I didn't play in, and did quite well at it. But I guess it was a matter of attitude as much as anything else.
Well, I think a lot of butterflies in situations like that, I would imagine.
Well, I would say from age 20 through, 25, 26, I was so adamant in the fact that I thought I belonged in the lineup. Because in most cases in Detroit, the catching situation and other places that I was, the people who were playing above me were not playing well.
They had but House and Wilson in Detroit, right?
Yeah, and, they were having average years.
Yeah, those aren't guys that you think of when you think of the top catchers of the last half century.
And I remember once Tuttle was out hurt, so they moved Kaline to center and put me in right field for two solid weeks. I had a 14-game hitting streak.
No kidding.
You know, and the minute he got better and got back in the lineup, I was just out, and didn't play again for 2 weeks.
Wow.
And, those kind of things happening to you occasionally, you'll just... And the club was not fighting for the pennant.
They were, like fifth place usually in those years, weren't they?
I finished fourth once in the 3 years I was there.
Mm-hmm.
We were predicted to do much better, and I think we should have. I think we really had the talent with Kaline and Boone and Keene and Maxwell and, you guys who could get the job done. And we had 20-game winners in Bunning and Larry and Heft. Foytek had a couple of good years.
Mm-hmm.
But we just never, ever put it together. And, adding all of that up and the desire to play so much, I think made me a very, very poor part-time and pinch-hit type of ball player.
I guess it takes a certain attitude to be able to rationalize being a part-timer.
Well, Cleveland was an interesting year because I had been traded for Hegan. And believe it or not, with all the great, great, great ball players that have come through Cleveland in their history, they had a newspaper poll that winter of 57. And Jim Hegan was a write-in candidate as the most popular player in Cleveland baseball history.
I knew he was a popular player. I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
He was a heck of a catcher.
Cleveland had this deal. And 2 weeks after that, they traded him for me.
Mm, it's a hard act to follow.
Over there as the most unpopular player in
Cleveland
history. And even though what little I played that year, I did exceptionally well, they just hated my guts.
Mm-hmm.
Because of who I was traded for.
That was the only year there, wasn't it?
Yeah, and maybe, I'd hit a home run at the bottom of the ninth to win the game and get standing boos as I was circling the bases.
Oh, no.
So maybe that helped me be better than I...
Give you a reason to try, anyhow.
Yeah.
Is there a game, a particular game that you had that stands out in your memory?
Surprisingly, probably the one that first comes to mind was not a good game. There was a Saturday day of the week game on television with Dizzy Dean and Buddy Blattner doing it in Baltimore. Now, even though during the bulk of my career I didn't ever win the job behind the plate with any one team, I got a reputation somehow or another starting that year with Cleveland. The two catchers in Cleveland were Russ Nixon, the now Atlanta manager.
Mm-hmm.
He was in his rookie year. And Dick Brown, who had signed and come up with Score.
Mm-hmm.
And they were rookies. And I was, you know, like a five-year major league man. Well, they were basically sharing the catching because Nixon was a left-hand hitter, Brown a right-hand hitter. And I was just filling in, pinch hitting and catching on a rare occasion. Except when Wilhelm relieved, I would warm Wilhelm up and come in with him. And, you know, I was catching the one inning, two-thirds of an inning, and that type of thing. And lucking my way through it probably as much as anything else, because that was before the big glove, and you had to get lucky.
Mm-hmm.
But Bragan was the manager the first half of that year in Cleveland, Bobby Bragan. He decides to start Wilhelm one day in Baltimore. And like I say, it was a televised game and a big deal and Dizzy Dean and all his men. Well, the night before, I'd been told I was going to catch him. And the thought of catching him nine innings, maybe, was just, you know, earth-shattering. Well, you just didn't get any sleep, let's face it. But somewhere in the middle of the night, I came up with this bright idea of catching him with a first baseman's glove. You know, it sounded so sensical, you know, with a big
mm-hmm.
web and snare it, you know. And
he didn't throw hard enough to hurt.
Right. So anyway, I warmed him up a little bit with it, and everything seemed to work fine. And we start the game, and I have three pass balls with it in the first inning. It's hard to explain, but it's natural if you're playing first base to catch the ball in the web. But if you're catching, it's natural to try to catch it in the palm of your hand.
Mm-hmm.
It's just human nature for somebody. Well, here his knuckleball was hitting me in the palm of the hand where with the first baseman's glove, there's not even any glove there.
Right.
And
just a slit, sort of a crease.
Somehow or other, I survived the first inning with three pass balls. But, by the grace of God, they didn't score.
Oh, that's
somebody
amazing.
Off or something. Double play, maybe. Whatever. They did not score. Well, I threw that glove away, went to the catcher's glove. He pitches a no-hitter for 7 2/3. Then, as I recall, Vic Power and Bob Niemann hit back-to-back doubles for a run. Then he gets the last four outs, and we win 4-1. I had one more pass ball with the catcher's glove,
mm-hmm.
which in those days, four was a record. Some guy with the Giants in 27 and a couple of his giant catchers in when he first came up to the major leagues. And then after he was traded to Baltimore and kind of became a starting pitcher for a while.
Mm-hmm, for a year or two.
Triondos, who was his everyday catcher with Baltimore, tied the record something like 12 times.
Oh, boy.
So there's now about 16 of us or 20 of us in the record book with four, all tied for the record, and with only two exceptions, Wilhelm was pitcher in every case. And then when Ryan first went out to L.A., a fastball pitcher, he threw five right past a guy named Dick Egan one night.
I remember Egan, yeah.
So Egan now holds the record of five, but
so you're out of the book.
Yeah, so knocked me out of the book. But when people mention a game, I think that one comes to mind first. I think maybe the second one was an early 1957 game. I hit a three-run homer off of Larson, which was the first hit he had given up in 6 months.
Oh, yeah.
Pitched the perfect game in the World Series. And this was his first start the following year. And it was like, I think he went around the batting order twice. So let's say it was the fourth or fifth inning. He had walked a couple guys.